Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you in part by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers located in the Sunset Junction area of Silver Lake. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated selection of spirits, and one of the most impressive collections of bitters anywhere. That's Barkeeper in Los Angeles. Check them out online at barkeepersilverlake.com, or better yet, just head on down to the store.
Hello, I'm Johnny Cash.
I hear the train a-coming, it's rolling around a bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps a-rolling on down to San Antone. When I was just a baby, my mama told me, son, always be a good boy, don't ever play with guns. But I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. When I hear that whistle blowing, I hang my head and cry.
I recently got to sit with a wonderful woman named Jen Aiken, who manages Rumba in Seattle. It's a Caribbean bar, so lots of rums on hand, as well as other things. And we talked about agricoles, horses, and Lord, oh so much more. So sit back and relax and join us at the bar, won't you?
Okay. So here's how we start. Tell me who you are. We're going to talk music and booze with...
Jen!
Yay! It's Jen from Rumba.
Jen from Rumba. You can find me on Instagram at Jen Aiken Me Crazy. Just to get that out there.
Jen Aiken Me Crazy.
Yeah, Jen Aiken Me Crazy. Yeah. So hi, I'm Jen.
And we're going to talk about music and booze. So do you want to start with music or do you want to start with booze?
Well, you know, music is kind of my childhood and booze is more of my adult life, obviously, so...
Let's talk about being a kid first.
Oh my gosh. I was raised on music.
Were you really?
I absolutely was.
Where did you grow up?
Lawrence, Kansas.
In Lawrence, Kansas?
Yes.
So what kind of music were you raised on?
Old country and classical.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, my dad used to take me to the symphony like once a month.
Are you kidding?
As a kid, yeah, the Kansas
That's
City
really
Symphony.
Cool.
Yeah, my dad is a kind of a... for lack of a better word, redneck that's really into a lot of different things. He's a great cook, fantastic at sewing.
Wow.
Loved classical music, was in like a children's orchestra as a kid, almost got accepted to Juilliard, joined the army, was a cowboy. He kind of actually, when I think about who I am as a person, I'm very much like my father. I can't decide on one thing to be, so I just be all of them.
Renaissance person. That's
yes.
How we like to put it.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
You like to dabble in everything. And
I do.
Tell me that's a, is that dilettante?
Maybe. I don't know.
I can't remember. I'm not reading as much as I used to, so my vocabulary is starting to fade.
Not an English major.
Yeah.
At all.
So did you retain any of that love for classical music?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I was in band all through growing up. I played alto saxophone and clarinet for... Oh my gosh, like 10 or 12 years.
Oh my god.
And I was in four bands. I was in marching band, symphonic band, regular band.
Oh, regular band.
Regular band. So like the band that...
There are hand gestures that go with the word regular band that you guys can't see.
The band that you go to when you don't get into
the
symphonic band.
Okay.
And then I was in jazz band.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
So never rock and roll band.
I, you know, I was asked to be in a ska band.
Ooh, well, of course.
So, because I played saxophone.
Yeah.
But let me tell you about 15-year-old Jen and how I didn't like the way my face looked when I played the sax. So I was like, there's no way I'm going to be in a ska band because my cheeks are all puffy and like I get all red.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're 15.
You're 15. You want to be as cute as possible.
Absolutely.
All the time.
Which is why I wanted to be a drummer. But
wait, drummers make horrible faces. Have you watched Drummers Drum?
I have.
I have. Oh gosh, they're like the high-end girl. That's the guitar player.
She's a bass player, and I love her. She's my favorite.
I love all of them.
I do too.
Her faces.
Her face are great. They're great.
The first time I saw them, I was just like, wow, I've never seen a guitar player. I said, I couldn't remember she was bass. I've never seen a guitar player make faces like that. It's insane. It's usually the drummers.
So I actually discovered, like most bands that I really enjoy, I discover because I walk into shows with friends. And that's exactly what happened. That's how I discovered Haim. But there's actually this thing on the internet. It's bass players with their bass guitars replaced with slugs. Have you seen this?
I have seen that.
Hers is the best.
Oh, that must be amazing. There's another I've seen, and it's like, it goes back to the drummer thing. It's like drummer face or porn face. Right. It's like guys making like expressions.
Absolutely.
And you have to guess if it's drummer porn.
Absolutely.
And then you make the guess, and then it'll give you the right or wrong and show you the real picture. Either pixelated or not. So bass players with slugs or just guitars, anyone playing guitar with slugs?
I think it might be just bass players, but I think anybody
I think I
playing
have
guitar.
Seen that though, but I don't know that I've seen hers, and that would be amazing.
Check it out. Google
Let's go
it.
Back to you, thinking that drummer bass is better than puffy saxophone bass. So you weren't in a band anyway. So what music do you hold on to? What do you still listen to from those days?
Girl, I listen to everything. I still, people always ask you that dumb, like, if you were to take three records with you on a deserted island.
What are your desert island records?
It is so hard to answer that.
Well, see, the other thing with that question is that it's hard to answer, and it also changes.
It absolutely changes.
I could ask you tomorrow, and you would have different answers.
I will tell you what never changes about that is Al Green's Greatest Hits album.
Okay.
I discovered that when I was 13 years old because I had a friend who was really into weird music, and, well, weird when you're 13 is like Al Green and Weezer when you've grown up on country. Yes.
Yeah. And so. Happiness is when you really feel good about somebody. There's nothing wrong being in love with someone, yeah. Oh, baby, love and happiness.
Love and
happiness.
And so she made me a mixtape, and Al Green, Love and Happiness, was on that. And I discovered that album, and it's the thing that I can listen to in every mood that I'm ever in and all the time.
Awesome.
And then usually it's Live from Folsom Prison by Johnny Cash is another one of those.
And was that a gift from Dad?
That was a bit of a gift from Dad. Yeah, absolutely. He kind of like led me on an interesting like country path. We used to go line dancing too once a week.
Oh, that's so
country
cool.
Western dancing.
The whole family or just you and your dad?
Me and my dad.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I used to wear like those long crinkle skirts and cowboy boots and like
nice.
Big belts with like turquoise belt buckles.
I grew up in San Diego, but our PE at the Catholic school I went to was square dancing.
That's awesome.
We did square dancing for a good chunk of time, and I don't remember. I'm sure if someone were to start calling it out right now, it would probably flood back to me.
It might.
So, yeah. So line dancing, I've never done. I've just seen.
It's so. It's interesting. I don't do it much anymore. Not gonna lie.
Do you miss it though? Or would you
know,
do it with your dad?
You know what I miss? So I grew up obviously living a bit of like a country lifestyle. I grew up with horses and pigs and ducks and all of the things.
Yeah.
But I grew up outside of a relatively large city.
Yeah.
We had like 100,000 people in our city, but I grew up right outside, and so all of my classmates were into like the cool stuff and wore Abercrombie, and I wore cowboy boots, and I, you know, mucked stalls in the morning, and I do miss that lifestyle. You know, I didn't play video games. I didn't have a lot of those things. I just spent all my time outside with the horses and the animals. And
the horses are wonderful.
Horses are great.
So, I mean, horses are incredible. I'm a girl. I loved horses when I was growing up. But right behind the town I grew up in, I grew up near the beach in San Diego. You go a little bit further, there's mountains and ranches, a lot of ranches. So I could just walk. It would be like 20 minutes, and I'd be amongst the horse people. So I used to just walk around those neighborhoods because these horses would come up to the fence and just be like, hey, how's it going? And I could just sneak a pet with a horse. I'm like, I can't have you, but I can touch you. You know, that was the extent of my horse stuff.
They turned me back into a child.
Horses
so like,
too.
Oh, absolutely. Anytime I see one, I'm like that little girl plastered to the window. She's going, ponies!
Yeah. Listen to music with the horses?
Oh, all the time. So as a teenager, absolutely.
I love music. I don't see why horses wouldn't either.
They love it. I used to, so I grew up riding, obviously. I got my first pony when I was 4. And before you think I was too spoiled about this, I was mucking stalls, and my pony did not really like people that much. He was an old curmudgeon named Buster. And he threw me the first 4 times I rode him. But I loved him more than anything in the whole wide world. And he probably stood about 3 feet tall. And he was really fat and really fuzzy. I absolutely adored him. But I grew up and I continued doing the horseback riding thing, and I eventually got into competing. And I used to, when I would go and like practice and work with the horses, I would definitely turn on music, and that's what we did.
Like,
and
country, I remember country pop radio.
Absolutely. And I remember being like 13 or 14 years old, and I'd be like, we do this thing where we warm up before the class, you like work out all the kinks. And I remember there'd be like, you know, 15 teenage girls in the ring on their horses, and we'd all have earbuds in, riding around. Totally dangerous because you can't hear anybody talking to you. But we didn't care. We're just listening to music,
riding our horses.
Absolutely.
That sounds awesome.
And checking out the boys.
Who are in the other ring?
Yeah, well, sometimes, so yeah. Well,
in your ring, could well, they?
They could be in our ring if we let them. It was usually mostly girls, obviously. There'd be the occasional boy.
It seems to be mostly girls that do the equestrian stuff.
You know the English stuff, but then you go to like rodeos and the Western stuff, and it's a lot of boys.
It's all the boys. It's more rambunctious stuff.
Yeah,
it's a little rowdier.
It's a little more wild. It's a little more dangerous.
So what kind of symphonic stuff do you still listen to?
You sort of read it,
what kind of classical music do you keep with you?
You know, I don't necessarily all the time. I do have...
So you don't have like a piece that you put on when you want to chill out?
I don't, but I do have Pachelbel's Canon in D tattooed on my arm.
Oh my God.
The wedding song? Yeah, and there's a reason for this. Not because it's the wedding song. It's my mother's favorite piece of music. It's what she puts on all the time.
Is your mom still with us?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So you got a tattoo for your mom?
Yeah.
Basically.
I have a whole sleeve of flowers, my mom's favorite flowers, and then sheet music to her favorite piece of music.
Is that like, hey, I'm going to get a tattoo, Mom. By the way, it's all about you. Yay!
Yeah, she didn't really know about it. I think she actually came to the tattoo shop to stop me.
Oh, really?
But
then she saw it was for her?
Yeah. I think her and my dad are still not totally sold on it. But that's okay.
It's how it goes by. They get used to it.
Exactly.
I mean, we both have nose rings. When I got the nose ring, my mom was not happy.
Not pleased.
At all.
I used to have a face full. I had my eyebrow, my lip pierced in a few places.
Oh, God.
I was one of those kids.
I grew up through the 90s.
Yeah.
I know. Everyone had stuff in their faces.
It's
a lot of people
real.
Still do. But yeah, the nose ring did not go over well. And I don't know. I don't think my mom ever knew that I had tattoos. I have a couple. You can see these now. This is recent. But I have a couple that you can cover up. I don't think she ever knew about them before she passed away. But my dad totally knows. And he just doesn't say anything.
My mom actually took me to get my very first tattoo.
Really?
When I was 17.
Yeah.
I got a Pegasus on my hip. Very tiny. She was like, it can only be this big. I have to know what it is, why you're getting it, and then she signed off on it and was okay with it. But then, that, I mean, it's like the size of a quarter on my hip where no one can see.
Yeah.
And then the next thing...
That's where my first one is too, it's right here.
My next tattoo was like a full sleeve.
Arm sleeve. You're like, I graduated.
Yep, sorry, Mom.
Wow, okay, so you have music tattooed on your arm. That's pretty significant. I have to know, what were your... Like, because like pop country is not something that I listen to much of.
No, I got out of I was not into the pop country.
You weren't into it?
No,
So, I mean, no. It was just what was on. So you heard it.
Yes.
So, but do you still listen to country music?
Occasionally.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
there's good country out there.
There is some good country.
Yeah.
There's some okay country.
And it's something like, kind of need to know, like, you know, what you have to dig a little bit more, I think.
Absolutely.
To find it, but it's definitely out there. So what's the good country right now that... Anything? Nope.
Right now?
No, nothing.
Girl, I don't even know. I still listen to, like, Shania Twain and Faith Hill. Like, that's still my go-to. I actually listened to Faith Hill's first album just the other day.
Aww,
and that just reminds me of being, like, 8 years old.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Hence the whole childhood thing.
Yeah.
So, but you work in a rum bar.
I do.
And it's a Cuban-based rum bar.
Yeah,
right?
it's Caribbean-inspired, lots of Cuban inspiration, lots of, like, Caribbean.
I've been there once. It was, like, 2 years ago when I was there, but I'm assuming the music is also...
So the music, actually, we select our music based on the personality of the bar at the time. Because this bar changes personalities.
Really?
Oh, absolutely.
How so?
Friday night after 11 o'clock is completely different than, like...
Meaning like that.
Absolutely. Yes. So Wednesdays we
that
do it...
very wide.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very
you have to change it based on
I used to program
the people
music
that are...
restaurants and bars.
Totally.
And it's like, you want your late night playlist, your daytime playlist, your dinner time playlist,
it's probably one of the most challenging things for me because I love music, but I'm not super knowledgeable about it, and I don't want to have like a cliche playlist where it's like top 40 or things that people hear all the time. That's distracting. I want something that's like in the background that people can go, oh, this music is perfect. I don't notice it, but I notice it.
Yeah, that's it. How it has to be.
Absolutely. So Wednesdays we do a tiki night, so that one's obvious. We have a surf rock radio station that's perfect. We have like a Spotify station that we have curated that's wonderful and gets the vibe going for exactly what you want, you know, everything from like Beach Boys to just like very standard surf rock. But then the rest of the time it's, you know, Friday after 11 o'clock, we do a lot of like R&B and hip hop because we're kind of a hip bar and it's what people want. Mondays at 5 o'clock, sometimes we'll play like jazz because it's chill and it's sunny out and it's kind of a perfect time for like a little upbeat jazz. So,
what's your favorite way that you get to play in the bar? Like, if you had your way.
If I had my way.
In that bar.
I would play, you're going to think I'm ridiculous.
Nice.
I would play, I would definitely play I Want to Dance with Somebody Radio all the time. Like 80s and 90s ballads.
Sounds good.
I Want to Dance Somebody, is that ballads?
Well, it's not really ballads.
Yeah, so I was just 80s, 90s like R&B pop.
Yes.
Kind of that.
Mariah Carey, Michael Jackson, Whitney Houston, Taylor Dane. Like, I would just have that play. Anything that I can, like, dance around to. It usually, like, sometimes if, say, it's an industry night, like, there's a lot of industry people in the bar, and it's, you know, 11 o'clock, I'll put it on. And it usually gets people, like, out of their seats dancing around.
Yay!
Because who doesn't love that?
It's true. It's true. The energy is high, and it's nostalgic. Just like
very
we were talking
nostalgic.
About before, you were saying the music of your childhood is still music of your childhood in a way.
Absolutely. Right?
So fun. Music of your college or something?
Well,
no,
yeah.
Still childhood.
definitely my childhood, for sure. Music of my college was more metal and hardcore.
I guess it's true.
And punk.
Yeah, that's true. It does get kind of noisy sometimes. But I was trying to think if I went into that bar and heard, like, it was nothing but Buena Vista Social Club or something like that.
Definitely not.
Which is something that could be an easy trap to fall into.
We do occasionally play yacht rock.
Yeah, that's been happening in the tiki worlds.
Yeah.
And some people are upset about it, some people don't care.
I like yacht rock.
I think it's fun.
Exactly. We had one of our most epic former bar managers, Jim Romdahl, used to work every Monday with one of our most epic bartenders, Keith Waldbauer, and they every Monday did Yacht Rock Monday. And that was the thing, and people would come in for it because you could just expect it to be like a really fun vibe, and those two are obsessed with Yacht Rock. And
did you guys have special drink menus?
Often.
Yacht Rock night?
Sometimes.
Yeah. So what's the Yacht Rock drinking choice?
Oh my gosh. Well, Royal Bermuda Yacht.
I was going to say, I can think of a couple of them, but I'm not a pro. So couple that would come to mind.
Absolutely.
Like, I would think of Pina Coladas because of that song.
Sure.
You have to do that. Did you guys make them slushies or did you make them proper?
Well, our pina coladas are made proper.
Okay.
Well, according to most, made proper on crushed ice. We did recently acquire a slushy machine, but we have yet to put a pina colada in it.
So when did you transition out of horses and into cocktails?
Oh my gosh. Well, I'd like to think that I've never transitioned out of horses. I still have a horse.
Do you really?
On my dad's farm in southern Missouri. His name is Dexter. And just to like bring it back to my country music root.
Yes.
So in the horse world, it is commonplace when you have a purebred horse to like name your horse after the farm that it came from.
Yeah.
Just to like give props to the farm that bred. So he came from Thunder Morgan Horse Farm. And so I named him the Thunder Rolls after the Garth Brooks song.
Yeah.
And I had this like dream in my mind, it's so ridiculous, that one day we were gonna like be in a competition where I could just like let him run around and there would be smoke. And he that song would play and he would like run around and it'd be super epic.
And it would be so like young woman.
Absolutely. Horse. This is like my 22-year-old like dream.
I really like that vision.
That's a good vision.
That's a good vision. With that song especially, because that song is so like,
it's epic.
It is totally epic. It's so epic. Didn't they like try to ban the video or they wouldn't
probably
even like the song?
Runs back down the hallway through the bedroom door. She reaches for the pistol kept in the dresser drawer. Tells the lady in the mirror he won't do this again, 'cause tonight will be the last time she'll wonder where he's been. The thunder rolls and the lightning strikes. Their love grows cold, dark, on a sleepless night. As the storm blows on out of control, deep in a heart. The thunder rolls.
Have Dexter run around.
There has to be like really epic lighting.
It's so like Hunger Games too.
Absolutely.
Like flaming dress.
Smoke, flaming, yeah, flame, smoke, lights.
And then that song just some Garth Brooks.
And then it like starts, you know, it starts really slow.
Yeah.
And it's like a build up. And then you let him go once it like,
song.
Once the chorus hits.
Oh,
and then
so
he's
good.
Running around.
I love this.
Yeah.
How do you make it happen?
You've brought out the official giant nerd in me.
Like,
now people know. Now everyone knows that I'm a huge nerd.
No, I think that's beautiful. I think it's absolutely... No, you know what it's showing? What it's telling me? You have a creative vision. And we can take that back to the drinks. Because the drinks are... We were talking earlier before we turned on the mics about how I'm mildly intimidated by the idea of creating cocktails because there's this kind of genius math to me that happens behind the scenes of this flavor with this flavor and that flavor with that flavor. You're obviously a creative person because you envision this whole tale based on this song and a horse. As well as other things. But you make fantastic cocktails as well. So how did you get into that in the first place?
So
you were saying your dad was a great cook. Does that mean you're
my dad's a great cook? No, I'm a horrible cook.
You're a horrible cook, but you're great at cocktails.
I'm great at cocktails. Let me tell you why.
Yeah.
I'm great at cocktails. I'm not good at cooking. It's because I need instant gratification in my life, and I don't have time to wait for things to cook.
I absolutely.
But when I, like, I need to know right away if it's gonna work. But when I make cocktails, I can just like mix things. It takes 2 minutes, and I'm like, yeah, this is bad, or this is great, or this needs work. I know immediately.
That's true.
So actually the transition happened. I graduated from, I'll give you the Reader's Digest version. Graduated from high school, went to horse school. I studied equestrian science. Hated it, let me tell you, hated it. I did not like making my career out of my hobby. And
that's
I did it.
Danger.
I got paid to train horses for quite a long time, and I ended up just getting really burnt out.
Yeah. When I went to the music industry, that it would kill music for me.
It's hard. It's a really hard transition to make. And so I went back to school, and like I said earlier, I like a lot of things. And so I kept going back and forth between, you know, I studied musical theater. I studied art. I did anthropology. I studied biology. I did everything. I was in and out of college for 10 years. I eventually landed on a biology and a chem degree. But throughout that time, I had to make money. I was paying for my own education. So I started as a barista because of a friend of mine who was a barista, and I thought she was cool. And I was like, well, I'm going to be cool too. So when I was 18, I started at this coffee shop in Lawrence, Kansas, the first organic and fair trade certified coffee shop in all of Kansas, actually.
Yay, awesome.
Which is really rad. I ended up working there for 7 years, and I worked with a couple of girls. I ended up working with a couple of girls who were bartenders as well. They were part-time baristas and part-time bartenders, and I thought they were even cooler, and I was like, I want to be just like them. They dated boys in bands, they smoked cigarettes, they drank alcohol, they drank whiskey.
Yeah.
Like, I was full on the vodka train, and I was like, I couldn't get off the vodka train to save my life, and I was like, these girls, they like whiskey, they're so cool, and they smoke cigarettes,
badass, right?
They hang out till 5 in the morning with dudes in bands, I want to be just like them. So they got me a job at a bar in Lawrence, Kansas called the Replay Lounge, and I was the trough girl, meaning we had a horse trough. We're in Kansas.
Yeah.
Well, remember, it was a horse trough full of ice and tall boys of PBR.
Yeah.
I could just pull out and crack, and I had like a little bar bank, and I would serve people on the patio.
Yeah.
We'd have live music out there. We had like a huge outdoor patio with a stage. We'd have live music, and the bar would get swamped, so they set me up to just do tall boys of PBR for $2.50. And that's how I got started. And then eventually I was like, I want to get behind the bar. So I would just like jump back there when they were busy and do their dishes and like wash their glasses. And then one day I was like, I want to learn how to bartend. You don't have to pay me. I just want to come in here and learn how to make drinks. So what they're teaching me, by the way, is how to make, like, you know, Jack and Coke.
Yeah, right.
Like, here's how you make a redheaded slut. And I'm like, this, by the way, has not served me well to this day. Other than, you know, I know how to speed pour really well.
Yeah.
So I moved from that I went to an Irish pub. I worked at a Mexican cantina for a while, owned by the same person, by the way.
The Irish pub and the Mexican cantina?
Yes, owned by an Irish guy named Ray. Down the street from one another. And then I started working at a beer bar in Kansas City, Missouri. Got really into beer. And again, just, I was like, please, please let me bartend. And eventually I was able to kind of bar back there a little bit. And then moved back after I graduated from college in Kansas City, moved back to my hometown in Lawrence, and got a job at this restaurant called 715. And that was summer of 2012. And I worked there for a whole summer. I knew I was moving to Seattle because I was tired of Kansas. And I managed to like somehow get a job bartending lunch there, even though I had never really bartended ever in my life. So this meant...
You mean bartended nice
like,
places.
I had never made a cocktail.
Okay.
Ever.
A proper cocktail.
Okay. Yes, I had made lots of highballs and poured lots of beer.
Lots of 7-7s.
Yes. So I managed to get a job lunch bartending there. It's where I made my first Sazerac, and I made it completely wrong. I put it on ice.
Oh, wow.
The guy was really nice, and he drank it, and he told me it was delicious. Which I'm sure it tasted okay. But that's really where I got my start, and that's really where I started getting super into cocktails and spirits. It's where I actually started transitioning from the vodka train onto like other things. Yeah, I had this woman who worked with me named Katrina who was like, you love gin, I swear. Let me show you that you love gin.
Oh, wow.
And this has actually been how I've learned to love every spirit. She sat me down and she gave me gins that were not like your standard, juniper bouquet.
Yeah.
And she made me cocktails with them to start. And she was like, you just need a really good cocktail. You need a really good gin. And I learned that I love gin. It was like this mind-blowing moment where I was like, oh, I can drink other things. And then that has happened.
That's gin you have right there.
Exactly.
Thank you.
It's delicious.
You're gonna have to drink some.
Sip Smith, one of my favorites.
Yeah.
But that has happened for me with every other spirit.
Yeah.
Someone has sat me down and said,
and introduced you.
Slowly.
Kind of like a slow taste,
yes,
of course. Almost.
Absolutely. And I'm so thankful for that.
Yeah. Well, now you're working in a rum bar.
Yeah. And rum has definitely been the thing that has, I'm absolutely in love with.
I was going to say, is rum your babe now?
Rum is my baby.
Yeah.
Rum is my baby. And, you know, the reason for that is because rum is such a diverse category. There's
a lot in that world.
There is a lot in that world.
Well, and gin, too. To me, I mean, we can say, like, the whiskeys also, there's a lot going on. But I feel like rum and gin have a lot of really distinct flavor profiles within their realms.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you think of, like, you know, Old Tom Gin and Jennifer and all of these different styles. I like to think of rum, we actually describe it more like we describe wine. It's kind of like taking every, you know, red varietal, and that's what you're looking at with rum. Because every country that makes rum, every region that makes rum, makes it a little bit differently. And so, therefore, you're looking at, and even within each region and country, some of them vary greatly.
Yeah, I mean, you'll see various cocktail recipes where it'll say make with white Jamaica rum.
Or right.
This, you know, like white Demerara rum, this is this, and a lot of people are thinking, is that? Is it rum? Like, no, there's so many differences there, and it does make a difference.
It's crazy.
If you pick the wrong rum. You're
absolutely.
Like, you just need a nice golden rum.
My favorite thing to do is sit again, when a guest says, I want a white rum. I'm like, okay, let's actually have a conversation. Or an employee, like, or somebody who's curious. You know, you can put four different quote-unquote white rums in front of somebody. You can put, you know, like a quote-unquote Spanish-style white rum, like a Havana Club, or like something from Cuba, something from Dominican Republic, something from Panama. And then you put a white rum from Jamaica in front of them, and those are two completely opposite products.
Different.
And they're going to make two totally different cocktails.
Exactly.
And that's the hardest thing about rum, is that there's not a really good classification system for people to understand what to expect.
Yeah.
With every other spirit, I would say, it's, you know what to expect. You know, you think of whiskey and you think of like rye and bourbon and scotch and Irish and single malt and all of these things. You know basically what to expect.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, with rum, we have descriptions like white, gold, and dark, which that's not necessarily helpful.
No, it isn't at all. We were talking about agricoles and how I'm not a huge agricole person. I dislike them, but then there's just so much within the world of rum. It's like, for me, I've done enough rum educations, and that is what is helping me. It's just by brand. I'm like, okay, this one is this one. But there are so many that when I see stuff up there, I'm like, I don't even know.
It's my favorite part. I love it because I'm constantly learning.
Yeah.
Every single day of my job is a learning experience. And I'm looking
forward to going there and trying the Colombian rums, because as I said, I've only had one and it was terrible, and you guys have a bunch of Colombian rums. And I'm very curious to see. And Colombia is also a country that has many different ecosystems within it. And that makes a difference.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like, what's in the air? What's in the ground? You know, is this a shady area? Is this a mossy area? Is this this? Whereas you've got, like, you know, the whiskeys from Scotland, Ireland, you pretty much know what that environment is. So that's why they're always the same. I'm not saying they're the same. I'm not putting it down. But like you were saying, you know what to expect.
Well, Scotland has many different regions. And that's the cool thing about Scotland is, you know what that when you get an Islay Scotch, you're getting a peaty, smoky, briny, delicious thing. When you're getting a Highland Scotch, you're getting something a little bit sweeter. Terroir is huge in rum, especially in rum agricole.
Yes, it totally is.
And so that's also a really fun experiment to play with people, is to give people three different rums, same rums, but made from canes grown in three different parts of a region, and to show them just how different it can be. We have some rum in the bar right now called Clarine. It comes from Haiti. It's essentially Haitian moonshine. it's amazing. It's made from fresh cane juice. It's made on a pot still. There's something like 530 different Clarine distilleries in Haiti, which is an insane amount. And we have three of them, all made from cane, all made on a pot still, all bottled at still strength. And they're all so incredibly different because the cane is grown on three very different parts of the country. And we actually have it on a flight, and so it's really fun to sit that down in front of somebody and be like, hey, this is rum.
Yeah.
Which is like the complete opposite of what people expect rum to taste like.
Yeah.
And then B, this is exactly what we're talking about when we say that this is such a terroir-driven spirit. I just find it so fascinating. It's so much fun.
So I guess then a question that I ask people, we'll throw this out of you now. I like to ask for pairings, like kind of like music and booze pairings. So like a lot of times it's what are you sipping on while you're listening to something at home, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But you might, I mean, I don't know, you dabble, you've got all the rum stuff. I know you like stuff outside of rum too.
I do.
But you're right now, you're in that world of rum. It doesn't have to be that though, but does anything come to mind? Like anything you would say, listen to this song and drink this drink or drink this rum?
I think that it really depends. And, you know, people ask me all the time, and I think this is a very similar question, is like, what my favorite thing to drink is. And it really depends on my mood, and I think that's the same with music.
Yes, same with music.
And so when it comes to like, all the time. So let's go back to
something like that you would pair together. Does it have to be
right. So going back to like what I can listen to all the time, that Al Green, Love and Happiness, that would be a daiquiri for me because that's what I drink. I could drink that all day, every day for the rest of my life.
Daiquiri is perfect thing.
It's so easy. It's so simple.
Yeah.
It's so delicious. I think you get into like sad, I don't know, little Johnny Cash action, and you're getting into like the old fashioned realm of things for me. It's like something like rich and boozy and like drown my sorrows. Although, you know, like I've definitely drank old fashions when I'm in a great mood. Agricole just reminds me of like sun and bright and happiness. And so that to me is like pop music.
Really? So Agricole would be what's the current? Why am I blanking out with current pop music is right now?
it's really hard.
But yeah.
Pop music. So like the entire Kendrick Lamar album that just came with so that
Elvin, down.
That
yes.
one. See, you are way better at music. I'm a little bit better on the booze side. I know what I like when it comes to music. But that would be like, I don't know, that's an upbeat, fun album.
That's a great album.
It's a fantastic album.
Well, it's upbeat, fun, but
it's also a little
depressing. Yes. Yeah. But you're right. But so would that be the Agricole? That would actually be a cool Agricole album.
I think that'd be a great album. Well, an Agricole can be so different too.
That is true. I tend to think of Agricole as being kind of funky.
Very funky.
So for me that works because it's kind of funky, it's kind of dark, but it's also great. So,
yeah.
All right. Kendrick Lamar, Agricole.
And then I think if we get into like real funk, like George Clinton, we're talking like unaged rum Agricole, rum fire Ray and Nephew.
I remember talking to someone who had just come back from Jamaica, and they said, "Oh yeah, we were all excited to see Ray and Nephew there," and then they said, "Oh, we use that to clean windows."
Ray and Nephew is actually the most drank rum in Jamaica, from what I understand.
Is it really? Yeah. Unless they're just really
unless
using
they're
it to
maybe
clean
ju- well, you know, maybe.
But I don't know why it tastes fine.
It's delicious.
I was like, I wouldn't take a sip of that and be like, oh, this is window cleaner.
I would either.
Never think that. I would never think that. So I'm just like, what are we missing if this is the quality that they use as a cleaning product?
Well, I'm pretty sure that was the opinion of Mezcal a while back.
Actually, I guess that's true. Yeah,
so,
Mezcal was something you used to start your car with.
Yeah, Mezcal and all of these quote-unquote moonshines that were considered, like Clarine, for instance. That's definitely not necessarily considered like a fine spirit, but there's no reason why it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of things that started that way, and I think Mezcal is a great example of that.
That is true. Mezcal is so popular now that it's definitely come back from that state.
It definitely has. Well, you get nerdy bartenders in on something, and they decide that they like something weird and funky, and then all of a sudden it's cool.
It's all over the place. What's the weird funky right now? You're saying you guys are Agricole.
Agricole, that Clarine is like... There's something called Paranubes that's made in Oaxaca. It's an agricole made by the people of Mezcal Vago.
I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah, made by the people of Mezcal Vago, and that is, it is very weird. It tastes like olive brine. It's delicious.
Wow, like olive brine?
Like olive brine.
So it's rum.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of ketchup when you smell it. And it's rum, yes.
And talk about savory.
Yeah.
Wow. What kind of drink do you make with that?
Well, so that's the one I was telling you about that we can't get anymore.
Oh, so you did have a drink made
We did a smash with it with a little bit of pineapple and lime, and that's it.
Yeah.
It was delicious.
Because it was such a savory drink in itself.
It didn't need much help.
Interesting. So how did you get into the creation side, like for yourself? You know, once you were shown, you're guided into spirits, you just like went nuts and you're like, I need to know more.
Yeah, I did. That's that restaurant 715 in Lawrence, Kansas. I just
picking herbs and smashing them and putting them into drinks.
My bar manager Margie, she was a very good mentor, for lack of a better word, and she was like, hey, we need a cocktail special for the dinner menu tonight.
Come up with
something. She was like, come up with something, and she would sit there with me and work on things, and we would come up with flavors that worked well together. And I think the very first custom cocktail that I made was a Lillet, muddled basil, orange juice, lime juice, and gin.
Orange and Lillet I've always liked.
It was delicious. A little basil.
That sounds lovely.
It was really yummy.
That sounds like I could drink a lot of that on a sunny day like today.
And I don't remember every cocktail I've ever made, but I will remember that one. So it was my very first cocktail feature.
How long have you been in Seattle now?
So I moved here in 2012. So going on 6 years. I moved away for a year and a half to go open a little hotel bar in Southern Oregon.
Oh, wow.
And then I actually moved back to come work at Rumba.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So when you came, by the time you came to the Pacific Northwest, you were basically a star making your cocktails.
I don't know
like,
about that.
No.
I moved here. I wanted to go to medical school. I just graduated from college, and I applied for jobs in my science field and in bartending, and I didn't get any offers working in my field, but I got a couple offers in bartending, and I was like, well, I guess I'll bartend. I got to make money.
Yeah.
And I worked at a restaurant down in Belltown called Local 360, which sources 90% of everything in-house from within 360 miles.
Wow. Okay.
So we used only local spirits.
Wow.
Only local spirits.
Oh, how fun.
Which was an interesting way to start my career in Seattle. I did get to know a lot of really cool local distillers, which I'm still friends with today.
Yeah.
And it actually helped me learn a lot about the distillation process, the science behind it, because I could go to these distilleries.
You liked it anyway.
And hear, absolutely. And hear the experts talk about what they were doing. And so that really helped my knowledge of spirits in general. And then from there, I went to work at a place called Oliver's Twist in Greenwood. And I worked with some amazing people that helped me develop my palate. And I got a couple drinks on the menu. And I think once you start getting drinks on a menu and people start ordering your drinks and loving your drinks,
you're just like,
it boosts your ego a little bit. And you're like, they don't know that it's your drink. But it's really nice encouragement to be like, this is delicious. This is amazing, you know? And so it drives you to keep doing it.
Yeah.
And especially if you are a creative person, there's always...
So with the instant gratification.
And the instant gratification. That's a huge thing for me. I don't like to wait.
Is there a drink for your saxophone?
A drink for my saxophone.
Do you still have
a saxophone? I do still. I don't have the clarinet, but I do have the saxophone. It's a little frightening to hear me play it now because I haven't picked it up in about 10 years. It usually happens after 3 or 4 cocktails.
I was going to say, I bet you that.
Yes.
What takes you to the saxophone?
Anything.
Any booze.
And
you're like, hey, have you guys seen my saxophone? I can play it.
I know exactly where it is. Girl, come over to my house. I will play you a song that you won't like. It's a lot of squeaking.
It's not as sexy as we expected.
I'm not so much sexy sax man anymore. More like drunk squeaky sax man.
Oh my god, I love that. Okay, so then let's tell everybody where they can find you. If you're in Seattle, come find you at Rumba.
Rumba, yes, I am there a lot.
And if they want to follow you on Instagram, that's easy to do.
Jen Aiken Me Crazy. My first name Jen, my last name Aiken.
Do you post pictures of your drinks there, or is it just pictures of horses you wish you owned?
No, it's definitely all drinks.
All drinks?
My life has turned into I am definitely a professional bartender now.
Yeah.
So it's
you're
fun.
You're loving it right now.
It's definitely fun. It's
yeah.
I
so
absolutely
for right
love
now,
it.
We should take advantage of this before you change your mind again.
I'm hoping I don't. I'm kind of tired of making changes in my life, and I've committed a long, 6-7 years to this now.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm doing pretty okay, and I really love what I do. So
oh, that's awesome.
I do love what
that's
I do.
Awesome. Very cool. I almost want to ask you if you have a favorite drink that you've made over the years, but that I think that might be like choosing a favorite child or something.
Oh my goodness.
Right?
I have a few. I have a few favorites.
Yeah.
I have the TikTok on that menu right there.
Which is the rumba menu.
Yes.
TikTok.
So that is a drink that's been
47 Jamaican rum. Which best.
Yes.
Fried. Ooh, the frog. Sorry, I was frog. And clove mint and bitters. Wow.
I've been working on that drink for like 2 years now.
Oh my god. What does that mean exactly?
It started as a whimsy cocktail for a friend of mine down in Ashland, Oregon.
Uh-huh.
And I really liked what I had done, and then it just never worked for the menu, and then I came up here and I was like, well, I work at a rum bar now, so why not put like a rum Manhattan riff on the menu? And it's one of my favorites. I don't know if I could drink it all the time, because it's very full of flavor, but it is one that I'm really, really proud of, for sure. Yeah.
So when it comes to rumba, they can try that one.
Oh, and this one.
The clear daiquiri.
That's my science background.
Well, I was going to say, okay, so I'll read folks. Yeah. Clear daiquiri is CO2. And I saw this, I'm like, ooh, that sounds interesting. You're like, it's agricultural. You won't like it. Like, no. I don't hate agricultural. So rum GM, clarified lime juice.
Yes.
This is you being science-y right there. It's clarified lime juice. Cane sugar and carbonation. I'm very intrigued by that.
Yeah, so that's my science background, getting to play around with my creative background.
There, yeah. I love that though, it's fun.
It is
fun. You know, do something like that, somebody sees that and they're like, oh, well, I'm probably not going to get that somewhere else.
It looks like soda water.
Really?
It looks just like soda water, yes.
I can't wait to try that. Yeah. So, all right, well, thank you so much, Jen.
Thank you.
I appreciate you yapping with me. In my head, I'm hearing Garth Brooks. And I am seeing that horse, and there are flames coming up from the dirt behind his horse as he runs in a circle, and you're in the middle, like, just commanding. You're like Storm from the X-Men.
Absolutely.
You're, like, controlling, like, the dust and the thunder and all that.
I think that's a perfect vision of who I am as a human being.
And there we go. Okay, on that note, we will say goodbye. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Big thanks to Jen for sharing her love of classical music, Garth Brooks, horses, and rum with us on this episode of Music and Booze with Mo. If you want to check out her Spotify playlist, we do have one, and you can go to the Mo Herms Facebook page to find all the info on Jen's Spotify list, where to find her at Rumba in Seattle, and her Instagram and all of that. So make sure you go check it out. Thanks so much to Jen. She was a lot of fun to sit there and talk to. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you in part by The Blind Rabbit, a speakeasy located in the Anaheim Packing District. The Blind Rabbit has twice been given Best Mixology Awards by the OC Register, as well as several nominations for their innovative cocktail program. For more info and to make reservations, go to theblindrabbit.com. Thanks for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guests and our Spotify playlist, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.